Welcome to Radio IQ's Virginia On Demand for this Wednesday. It's a daily podcast from Radio IQ featuring the top stories across Virginia. I'm Jeff Bosser. A handful of environmental groups have filed a legal challenge against an authorization granted by federal regulators for an expansion of the Mountain Valley Pipeline. The groups, including Appalachian Voices and the Sierra Club, have asked a federal court to vacate a certificate of convenience and public necessity issued to the MVP Southgate project by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission late last year. They argue the project isn't needed to meet regional gas demand and that it would have significant environmental impacts. Southgate would extend the pipeline from Pennsylvania County to Rockingham County in North Carolina. The project still requires some federal approvals. This note of disclosure, the Southern Environmental Law Center, which filed the review petition, is a financial supporter of Radio IQ. Governor Abigail Spanberger signed the first batch of legislation sent to her by the General Assembly into law Tuesday. Brad Kuttner has this report.
Bills signed by the governor as of Tuesday include efforts aiming to eliminate additional fees on healthcare premiums, expanding the Virginia Eviction Reduction Pilot Program, and paving the way for easier permitting for manufactured homes. Another effort hoping to reduce Virginians' energy bills in the face of rising data center demand was carried by Fairfax Democrat Senator Scott Surivel and Delegate Irene Shin. Shin told Radio IQ it was a huge win for ratepayers.
This legislation is going to help ensure that data centers can pay their fair share, especially for infrastructure costs that they require in order to service their data centers. And so that will make sure that they are bearing the brunt of the cost rather than passing that on to ratepayers.
Spanberger has until April 13th to sign, veto, or amend legislation passed during the 2026 General Assembly session. The legislature will return to Richmond in late April to consider those vetoes and amendments, as well as finalize the state's budget. In Richmond, I'm Brad Kuttner.
Being a large animal veterinarian is not a 9-to-5 job. And there are other challenges as well.
I think you have to work up to the physicality of this job. People think of the gee whiz injuries you can get, but most of the time it's the day-to-day little things that the wear and tear on your body that it creates.
And there are fewer and fewer people doing the work. Christine Cuter tags along with Dr. Melinda McCall as she makes a farm call in Central Virginia. That story is coming up in a little bit. Some local government leaders in Virginia are urging the governor to veto legislation that would expand collective bargaining. Michael Pope has this story.
Governor Abigail Spanberger is currently considering legislation that could radically change how local governments across Virginia would operate, specifically their relationships with their employees, who would be able to engage in collective bargaining if she signs the bill. Spotsylvania Board of Supervisors Chairwoman Lori Hayes is among those urging the governor to veto the bill.
As we see it, this legislation would in effect be another unfunded mandate to be paid by the local taxpayers. And this is also taking away any decision making from the local governing body.
The bill carves out exemptions for college professors and graduate students and librarians, which Pulaski County Manager Jonathan Sweet says undercuts the argument for the bill.
If Pulaski County employees should be under collective bargaining, then why not University of Virginia employees being under collective bargaining? You know, why is it good for the goose and it's not applied to the gander, right? I mean, so that argument would be logical if it was applied universally, but it's not.
Governor Spanberger has the ability to amend the bill to include college professors and graduate students and librarians, and many advocates are urging her to do just that before her deadline to take action, which is Monday, April 13th. I'm Michael Pope.
A new report suggests Virginia's nonprofit hospital systems aren't spending enough to treat the poor. But the hospital systems say they spend hundreds of millions on that care. Brad Kuttner has this story.
So they're prioritizing investing and growing their hospital system and resources over providing charity care.
That's Dr. Lisa Grabert, a health policy professor at Marquette University, talking about a recent Hospital Spending Watch study of 2023 data that analyzes how Virginia's nonprofit hospital systems are spending funds from a drug rebate program designed to increase their ability to serve the poor. Grabert says that program is being abused.
About 120% more is invested in stocks and bonds for hospitals that participate in the program versus those that do not.
But Julian Walker with the Virginia Hospital and Healthcare Association said the study failed to take into account additional data that showed how hospitals are spending hundreds of millions in services and community benefits in the billions.
Since 2018, Virginia hospitals have contributed more than $3.6 billion to fund Medicaid expansion. From what I saw in that report, I don't see any of that critical context mentioned.
Both Grabert and Walker said concerns about the use of funds from the drug benefit program have been targets of critics and lawsuits. Grabert said federal legislative efforts have stalled, but states could try their own regulation too.
They could say that the charity care has to be above the average for all hospitals within a state.
Walker, meanwhile, said federal cuts under President Donald Trump are already putting Virginia hospitals in a tight spot.
The impact on Virginia hospitals is projected at full implementation to be more than $2 billion a year.
In Richmond, I'm Brad Kuttner.
Researchers at Virginia Tech's Fralin Biomedical Research Institute are discovering more about the impacts exercise has on our bodies. Zhen Yan is a professor leading several studies into what happens to our cells when we exercise.
We are truly curious about what's happening. We all know exercise is good. I would argue that we do not know enough. The more we understand, the better we are.
They're learning more about a protein called AMPK and how it regulates our ability to make energy. When we exercise, our cells receive a signal to tell our bodies to improve. Yan says this can also help us fight disease and improve cognitive function. This note of disclosure, Radio IQ, is a service of Virginia Tech. Virginia Commonwealth University has a new women's basketball coach. Chelsea Banbury comes from High Point University in North Carolina, where she spent seven seasons, won four Big South regular season titles, three conference tournament championships, and made three NCAA tournament appearances. Banbury will be formally introduced in a press conference Friday at VCU. She replaces Beth O'Boyle, who was fired in early February. This programming note, Radio IQ will carry NPR's special coverage of the Supreme Court's oral arguments in the case known as Trump versus Barbara, which challenges President Trump's order limiting birthright citizenship. Coverage is scheduled from 10 till noon today. Large animal veterinarians are in drastically short supply in rural areas across Virginia. But Dr. Melinda McCall has been a community staple for farmers, ranchers, and homesteaders across Central Virginia for more than two decades, as Christine Cuter reports.
Separate a calf from its mother, and you'll hear about it.
So they're lactating still, so they're a little bit pissed off because, like, their babies are getting kidnapped just for a minute, like, while we work them, and then they get put back together. So once we finish, you won't hear a peep, not a peep.
It's a freezing cold morning at Mount Ida Farm in Albemarle County, home to 130 mother cows and just as many babies. Chaps wearing farmhands channel uncertain heifers into a holding pen, where McCall and veterinary assistant Becca Ritchie poke them with vaccines, sprinkle them with dewormer, and check their hindquarters.
She's pregnant. She's about 2.5.
It takes less than 2 minutes per animal, and McCall and Ritchie are pink-cheeked from the effort.
9 times out of 10, they don't kick when you're in their rectum. I just touch, and I'm like, I'm here? And they're like, okay. So it's not such a, like, boom, that would be, nobody would want that. Your baby's coming.
Agriculture is Virginia's largest private industry. Cattle sales and dairy products are Virginia's second and fourth biggest farm commodities. But large animal veterinarians who tend the food supply, like McCall, are a dying breed. Since 1945, the U.S. has lost 90% of its large animal veterinarians. Of the roughly 133,000 American vets today, just over 3%, about 4,000, work with production animals like McCall does. More than half of McCall's patients are cattle. The rest are sheep, goats, llamas, alpacas, and the occasional hot-tempered pot-bellied pig and agritourism mini-cow. In addition to primary care, McCall treats injuries and infections, does artificial insemination, prescribes and oversees medication, including antibiotics, and educates farmers and veterinary students. She also helps laboring animals, like 36 of Fluvanna County homesteaders' overpregnant sheep, who's stamping uncomfortably in her pen.
She's just not quite dilated yet enough to bring it out of there right now. I think we're going to have to just induce her. That or do a C-section on her.
In Virginia, recent legislation provided four $110,000 grants to large animal veterinarians who work in rural areas. Federal vet school loan repayment and state pipeline programs help too, but the jobs challenges keep many away.
All animals, of course, like all humans, don't necessarily get sick, between 9 and 5.
Virginia State veterinarian Charlie Broaddus works for the Virginia Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services.
The time to demands, in addition to the geography, is a big factor as well. I don't know any large animal veterinarians that haven't gotten hurt throughout their practice career. It's an issue of wearing out knees and shoulders over a long period of time, as well as the emergency thing that you just never know what's going to happen with, a crazy cow or a horse may just bump into the veterinarian that's right next to it and knock somebody down and can get very badly hurt.
McCall has broken bones in her fingers to her feet and injured her spine and skull.
I think you have to work up to the physicality of this job. People think of the gee whiz injuries you can get, but most of the time, it's the day-to-day little things that the wear and tear on your body that it creates.
While 84% of veterinary medicine students are now women, many farmers still expect large animal vets to be men.
I always laugh at the men who are standing there waiting on the guy to come, and you're like, what if I said no guy's going to come? What if I said there aren't any guys left to come? Even if that's what you wanted, you couldn't even get that. And they don't know what to say then.
After giving 36 a shot to help start contractions, McCall clambers back into her pickup truck with Richie, where they'll tabulate the bill, take calls, send texts, and tick off another mile in the 50,000 they'll travel together this year. Reporting from Louisa, I'm Christine Cuter.
Checking out the forecast, warm and breezy conditions continue. We'll have scattered showers and storms today, especially by the afternoon and evening. Some strong to severe storms are possible, fairly breezy too. Highs in the mid-70s to 87 in Fredericksburg and Richmond. Rain coming to an end tonight, some clearing overnight, lows in the mid-50s and lower 60s. And we'll have a mix of sun and clouds Thursday, a couple of showers and rumbles of thunder possible. Fairly breezy too, highs in the mid-70s to 85 in Richmond. Thanks for listening to Virginia On Demand. A little reminder, subscribe and tell your friends about it. For Radio IQ, I'm Jeff Bonser.